Hello, everybody. I'm continuing to work through 2 Corinthians, and we've got to chapter 6 and verses 11 to 13. And I've entitled this audio blog, "Does the Church Shoot Itself in the Foot?" So before we answer that, let's read those two verses together where Paul says this: "We have spoken freely to you, Corinthians. Our heart is wide open. You are not restricted by us, but you are restricted in your own affections. In turn, I speak as to children, widen your hearts also." So, does the church shoot itself in the foot? In my opinion, yes. I've led 3 churches, and I could give you a very, very long list of people who have written, emailed or spoken to me about their opinion or complaint of another person in the church. And some of those have had opinions and complaints about me. I don't know. But do you not think that our threshold in the church to tolerate difference, perhaps live with people that make mistakes or have weakness, is so incredibly low? And I've often wondered how seriously we take things like these words that John said, that actually came from Jesus, where he says in 1 John 4:21, "And this commandment we have from him." We have a commandment from him: "Whoever loves God must also love his brother." Oh dear, the failure of the church to love its own is really a blemish, is it not, on the public face of Christianity? All have seen it, and many have felt it, and there are countless reasons why this is a problem. For some, it's fear. Others, lack of trust, suspicion, past failures, grudges, unforgiveness, anger, broken promises. On the other side, there's ambition, pride, insecurity, and much more. It is so easy to just leave and start again, go to another church and take all your problems with you. It is extremely difficult to stay and work things out. Yet, one of the strengths of Scripture is the refusal to sugarcoat the relational mess amongst its prominent characters and its churches. Their pain is there to teach us. And I guess some might have preferred Paul not to publicise his struggles with the Corinthians. So why has Scripture preserved so many horrible episodes? Well, I for one am really glad that they're there. Because how else do we learn? How else do we grow together? How else do we overcome the obstacles that hinder our witness to a lost and dying world? I think when you read these verses, you can really feel the tension and also the heart of Paul. Most of us have, at one time or another, been on both sides of this sort of dispute. Like the Corinthians, who may have developed a lack of trust for leadership in the church. That may have been fueled by gossip or misinformation. You may have grown to doubt their sincerity or their honesty. Perhaps you view them as power-hungry, insensitive to the needs of others, plainly just wrong. And as a result, there is little room left for them in your heart. On the other hand, you, like Paul, may have been the object of unwanted criticism. Notwithstanding your best efforts and most sacrificial work, people have misinterpreted your motives and called into question your character. And you may wonder, after all I've done and everything that I've given, you'd think they would give me the benefit of the doubt, but they never do. you know, regardless of the side of the fence that you are on, it hurts. Whether you stay or whether you leave, it hurts. But do we not expect something different from Christians? We're shocked, are we not, when people who are not Christians seem to behave differently, if not better than Christians. I've heard so many times my friends are not Christians, but they wouldn't do some of the things that Christians that I know have done. You know, we can act out of our hurt. We can act out of our fear. We can act out of our stubbornness. We can not give forgiveness. We can give it a nod, but not give it. And actually, it is forgiveness that releases us. It's clear from Paul's words in this passage that he was not going to accept that we should just be in a church that was relationally dysfunctional. That he wasn't going to accept, oh, just leave Corinth and go to Colossae or Ephesus or Thessalonica. They're miles away, but you know what I mean. So what I'd like to do is just highlight some principles in these few verses that are at work in Paul's relationship with the church in Corinth. And I hope and pray that you and I will be able to climb down from our high and lofty positions and learn together. So I want you to please notice the deeply personal and direct way which Paul addresses them. He uses the word Corinthians, not simply you. As well as an appeal to them as Corinthians, he calls them children. He has on other occasions used this term before, O foolish Galatians and you Philippians. He sees it as a collective problem, not a singular problem. It's not just one person's problem. It's all our problem to solve disunity. We are all responsible for this. And the use of children is not childish. It doesn't mean your behaviour is childish. But he's speaking to them from a position of deep affection. They were his children. They were in his care. He had led many of them to Christ. In fact, this is an affirmation of intimacy, not indignation. And it's not easy, is it, to speak in those terms to those that hurt you badly. Your instinct is to keep them at arm's length and to protect yourself. But Paul won't have it. He is open and upfront about his feelings for them. This is not a guarded or dispassionate command on his part, but a heartfelt appeal from a spiritual father to spiritual children. Can't be mature. Next, he's transparent and honest. Paul lets his heart be known. He doesn't hold back anything. He doesn't hide his motives. There's not a facade, a pretense. There's no flattery. He won't use verbal manipulation and just says the simple truth. It's accurate. It's honest. He just says, look, our heart is wide open. We don't want you to do this. We don't want you to act like this. He says, or Jesus says, sorry, that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. We say what's deep. And Paul hopes and prays that the Corinthians will hear his words and feel his heart. He knows that they're suspicious of them. He knows that they hold grudges. He knows that they doubt his sincerity. And he knows they're afraid of entrusting themselves to him again. And yet he opens up his heart. The phrase we've spoken freely to you is literally, our mouth is open towards you. It's a description of a graphic and pointed way of describing an utterly unrestrained, vulnerable, frank way of speaking. Paul is appealing them to trust him and to trust his honesty. As we move on, Paul is prepared to guess correct false ideas or unwarranted beliefs that they had. Tells them in chapter 11, look, I love you. He uses a figure of speech called litotes, in which a positive is emphasized by the use of a negative. So when he says, you are not restricted by us, he means you will always know my full devotion. Always. We will always love you with unbridled affection. More literally, you could put it this, I have not allowed you to be squeezed out of my heart. I won't allow that to happen. He will not allow them to get him to change how he feels about them. Isn't that amazing? He did, however, identify the problem very bravely. He didn't skirt around the issue or pretend that it was less painful than it was. He was very specific and direct. Paul is convinced that the problem is not that he lacks affection for them, but that they have shut their hearts towards him. He says, you are restricted in your own affections. The word translated affections is a graphic one. The Greek word refers to the inward parts or the internal organs, if you like. It's a metaphor for the emotions or feelings. You've cut yourself off from me. Paul unashamedly declares that they have failed to reciprocate his love. His feelings for them are honest and sincere and passionate. He has not closed himself to their needs or to their pain, and in turn, they have not returned his love. If he's open, they have become close to him. This is very challenging stuff, isn't it? But lastly, Paul makes an urgent and heartfelt appeal to them. In return for opening his heart, he pleads for them that they will open or widen their heart to him. You know, in a medical term, I guess an enlarged heart is dangerous. But in spiritual terms, an enlarged heart is productive and positive and can break through all barriers. Paul doesn't hit them with heavy-handed positional power, but speaks to them as a friend and a father. He doesn't play the apostolic trump card to enforce his will, but he entreats them and pleads them with tender passion. His spirit isn't official, it's personal. Does it always work? No. There will always be people who want to have an opinion about you or have an opinion about someone else. For us to release this into our churches will require vulnerability that I think some maybe are not yet willing to embrace. But Paul will not allow anything to come between the brothers and sisters. Paul seems clear to me that he was determined to obey his own commands, however painful, where he said to the church in Rome, repay no one with evil, but give thought to do what is honourable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Now, I know that that's not an easy thing to do, but surely the alternative is simply not an option in the church. It was not an option for the one who said this. And this commandment we have from him, whoever loves God must also love his brother. God bless you all.